off yesterday, neighbor. Just to reiterate, I don't know Ms. Gina. I don't remember checking with you, but Ms. Mushwana was meant to go to the Gender Equality and Equity Seminar of the park. 28th of February, or anybody who makes commissions there after, we would not call them to our office. Mr. Gandhi, hope you are well, sir. You had your permit today. Where will be Mr. Gandhi on the
thank you very much. S8 continues the decry on the lack of values in education. It recommends that Christian values should be taught, which is essentially values. We partly address that another subject of religion yesterday. And then the next point, they propose that we should import school uniforms.
Okay. I think the issue of values and religion in schools was something that we dealt with yesterday quite thoroughly.
The next submission is from a secretary of a school. It refers to instances of inefficiency by administration personnel of the department. In this particular case, they have lost documents of teachers, resulting in the delay of salary payment. The submission points out that delay in salary payments affect teacher morale. And they are making a plea for Parliament to rectify the problem.
This one here, I put a note in my book that I'm not sure if it's going to be where it is. It doesn't look necessarily like a submission, but a complaint about a specific problem and certain individuals that are named. And my instruction here is to try and just calculate something what the complaint was and also refer some of these issues to the staff. And I don't have the way.
Chair, could we have sight of what the department's reply is?
No, he sends the letter.
He sends the letter, yeah. When the reply does come.
Yeah. Now, of course.
Can you show us that? I think as a person who's taken the trouble to write to us, we should know what's going on.
It's just that I don't want us, when we discuss these issues, in fact, I was hoping that Mr. Brown and Mr. Bundy would have received responses already by the time we got here. Because, you know, these kinds of submissions, they name people and sometimes unfairly as well. And these are public proceedings. So I didn't want us to deal with the details of these issues here in this process, but a separate process, which, of course, you would receive responses. You'll receive a copy of the letter as soon as I get a copy of the letter. But you'll also get a copy of the response.
Great. It doesn't say on it what province this school is in. Do you have that information there?
I think I must ask Dr. Klopperfleur. It looks like she's referred to the gentleman. But I think the problem is that they confuse the process of public hearings with complaints, which is, you know, two different issues. And they shouldn't ideally have come as part of the submission. Ms. Schwann, I saw your hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Yes, you saw my hand up. Because I wanted to say, yes, you are talking about this specific issue, but it's not necessarily the only issue. This is what we know. But that I think it's fortunate that the Parliament, we are made to do something about it. And I wanted to say, we need to take this very seriously, because we're not talking about this, but I'm the general. But if educators are not paid for sure, even your mother, she said, will go down. So you can't wait, and after a year, people haven't paid, and I know it happens. But then I think we need to talk to the relevant department for them not to lose documents, and so that people are saying, I mean, you don't work and you're not paid. If you talk on value, let's add it one to them. Thank you.
I must have said to make a general inquiry from the department about incidents of unpaid salaries. And I'm told that there isn't a general problem and that the system works perfectly well. The problem, it seems, comes about where you have the OC, what do you call it, occupation-specific dispensation. And in some instances, those things haven't been rectified. So you remember that was part of their agreement last year. And given the fact that you had to differentiate between somebody who's been a teacher for X amount of years as opposed to, it's not a one-size-fits-all type of thing. That's the kind of general explanation I got. But these specific instances, we will definitely get specific on these things. And then maybe depending on the answer and so on, we can make further inquiries about the extent of incidents. Okay? And again, the next one is in the same vein. And I'm not sure if they're related to each other.
Chair, would it be possible to ask for a date by when the department wants to be dismissed? I don't want to drag out forever.
No,
Emma,
when I know. I haven't seen my
date.
The answer
to
ground drop.
So what I'm saying is, would you be able to set, say, the end of September or something like that, by
no,
the time by when we
would have the information? I asked them to do it directly to the minister's office for that reason, and not the normal channel from Parliament and questions in Parliament. As I say, you know, this is an administrative communication from our side.
The policy of the school, they are now asking really a matter of the main attention of the government. Because having goals or whatever, all the schools in the country. But I think it's something that needs to manage and let their own internal processes as being adopted and not taking any help. But it's a matter of the country with the government.
I hear what you're saying, but I think the complaint is less about the issue of nuisance and noise and so on, as it is about production. In the sense that the contention, or one of the contentions, is a various contention. And one of the contentions is that somebody is actually leasing out the school premises and making money from it, pocketing money. That's the contention. And that's really something far more serious. Okay, but as I said, this will be dealt with in a similar vein to the incident. We are now at Education 11 for primary school.
Submission 11, there are no clear guidelines regarding what to teach. This matter was addressed yesterday. In fact, it was said that the department is repackaging the curriculum to address such issues. The next one, many young staff cannot afford to go to universities. The suspension proposes the following. Number one, bring back colleges of education. To reduce class size, train principals in human resources and health, fill posts timely, bring back trade schools, and lastly, accommodate learners with special educational needs, appoint school counselors to help with social and school disabilities.
Outside of can we move on then? Bring back colleges of education. This is under the broad topic of us adding the commission on teacher development. Now leave the aspects of the relevant aspects of the commission. Under the heading teacher development, it says number one, bring back teachers' quality. Many youngsters cannot afford to go to university, or they do not get the university education. Colleges give practical training. Right in recording that discussion, can I just ask you, as a member of the Higher Education Portfolio Committee, has there been any kind of discussion on this very issue? Very specific, not just FEC colleges generally, but to your recollection, do you get a sense of where higher education is going on this matter?
In one of the
in the past, we had teacher colleges. And part of the reason now that we're sitting with this legacy of teachers not being able to grapple with the curriculum and so on is the legacy of colleges. So I don't think we must isolate these issues. They're all related and intersect. But then again, you know, I think we tend to have these discussions very starkly. We tend to say colleges in the past, and so therefore we impute this notion that even the colleges of the future will be exactly the same, without thinking that look, we can be creative about it and we can sort out some of these differences, as we have done to so many institutions. We've transformed the five-state institutions in the 15 years that we've been here quite significantly, and I don't think we often think what I'm saying is that there's a silo mentality that goes to these debates that we need to start integrating. The other issue is, of course, the need to train more teachers going into the future to make sure that there is some kind of security of and a pool of really good, sound teachers that are coming out of these systems and so on. What is abiding for me, of course, is the differences of experiences in the public hearings. You recall Dr. Ismail was saying in the last, session that we had, he was saying he's got a doctorate, which he obtained at university, but he started off his academic career in a college. And he says, I can have 10 doctorates, but it won't prepare me for school. And that's really significant, because quite clearly colleges were geared towards a practical training of what happens in the classroom, as opposed to, and which is not to say that, you know, one shouldn't, and that's why I always say there are two issues when it comes to teacher development. The issue is, what does the department expect to happen in the classroom? And then the second issue is what we call lifelong development and training and learning, so that we don't have teachers stagnating as just having a college diploma and not being able to enrich themselves throughout their lives. I think that's quite important. So teacher development does have all of these different aspects of it, and it's really going to be important that we fold these issues together in the report. And maybe what we'll do is, as we go through this issue, I won't park this issue as having been finalized. What I think we will do is we will spend more time debating teacher development generally, because you'll see different ideas come from different people and so on. That this will be one of the, what I would call, the priority areas of development in the report, so that we have some kind of position coming up.
Okay, so the other issue which we need to
also we add that to the list of things that Mr. Mahada is doing to help us. Mr. Mahada, I think the point that's being made here is that we need to assess outside of the college system. In other words, I'm not sure when we closed down all of these colleges. I think about 5 years ago, 4 years ago. I can't remember. But could you just find out just gather some empirical evidence for us on this issue of how many students have actually graduated and gone, well, I think it would be difficult to say who have actually they've gone into teaching, but at least graduated, we'd be able to get those things out of universities into the teaching profession as such. Would you be able to do that for us? That would be entirely useful for this discussion and also feed into this aspect of the report. But I also think we mustn't forget the issues that the school, I don't think there's a single person here, I think it's just the school that made the input, that they make. They talk about the issue of affordability of universities and accessibility would go hand in hand with that. It raises this issue of the numbers that they've been able to churn out as well. And then the second issue is that given that we have quite a large number of students who have passed matric, remember I've always said that given our system and the high attrition throughout the system, that you've then got a third, roughly speaking, of students who get to grade 12 from the original cohort from grade 1. So the third that get to matric have already achieved quite substantially, in my view. And then, of those, you have a certain attrition who don't write, but that's a small fraction. And then those who write the exam, you have 60% of those who pass. Right, that's last year's figure, 60% overall. Of the 60%, you don't have all of them getting what we call a matric exemption or a bachelor's pass, as it's now known. So, and even if, and I don't know what the percentage there is, but even let's say we say 80% of those kids get an exemption. Of those kids, only 20% are able to be accommodated at university. So that's quite a minuscule fraction. Okay. So that's an important point that they raise as well, is that it's just not feasible to say that you can only go and train to be a teacher at the university. Reducing class size. Is there anything anybody wants to say on this issue? I mean, it's a matter that is raised over and over and over again in our submissions. I don't think there's a single submission that we've received by a teacher school that doesn't speak to this issue. Interestingly, of course, it goes down to resources. And interestingly, we're in smack in the middle bang of salary negotiations, and we have a direct impact on the number of posts that the department is able to produce and to create. So, you know, it's often divorced from this issue of budgets and salaries and so on, but it has a very, very direct impact on this matter. Mr. Marcadero?
Thank you. for the vaccine to come out later. If you are in a corn after 150 or 150 years, and after the natural mean moving towards achieving what they can do. But there will be those who are taking one to both health and the environmental.
Where they are in their school. I think Mr. Loma will be able to tell us, because I know that there's a question that you posed and you received an answer to what the national norm is or something of that sort.
That's correct, Chair. The national norm is, and you got it right, it's in primary schools 1:40, I think, and in high schools 1:35, I think it's that way around. If I may just add, though, if you look at the submission, in this section called Managerial Capacity in Schools, this impact on what we're talking about. If you look at points 4, 5, and 6, it talks about immediate filling of posts through regular bulletins. Now, it's interesting to me, this comes from King William's Town, that's in the Eastern Cape. And that is a particularly delinquent province in not issuing regular bulletins. And the result of that is that often schools which are increasing their enrollment don't have sufficient teachers, or they lose teachers, and they don't get replacements in time. I know of one school in Port Elizabeth where I was this week where they're short 6 teachers. Another school in Port Alfred which is short of 5 teachers. And this impacts on class size. In the school near Port Alfred, for example, there's one class, I told you yesterday, Chair, where there are 74 grade 5 pupils. And that's simply because they haven't been allocated their fair share of teachers. So if we could say something in our report that urges provinces to issue bulletins regularly, then I think we'll go some way towards solving this problem of class size.
And
Ms. Gina
can help here as well. Just in terms of how these processes are supposed to work, right? When we say a national norm, do I take it that all of the provinces have the same norm to strive for? So there would be one teacher for 40 kids in primary school and one teacher for 35 kids in high school. That's like a national norm. Of course, you could have lower, but you shouldn't ideally have higher. Now, as a principal, right, you have, sure.
That answers the question that you're talking about, indicated that the Eastern Cape teacher establishment is 1 to 30 across the board. They're more fortunate than other provinces.
1 to 30.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm interested in, because I would take it that the national guideline would try and incorporate the situation in all the provinces and try not to create a standard to own them, right? But that individual provinces should have not.
Could we perhaps get clarity from the department on this?
Yeah. Now we can do that. We can do find out from somebody who was a principal. As a principal, you, how would that work in practice? You would have to say to the department that you anticipate, when does the registration take place? So no, by the end of November, you would know what you need for grade one, right? And for the rest of your grade, you think that there is stability, right? Because whoever's there, one or two chop and change, whatever, but mostly you would have a kind of a stability there. Now, how would you then go about speaking to the province if your enrollment suddenly is much higher than you anticipate? So in other words, you've got, let's say, 3 grade 1 teachers, and now suddenly you've got 500 kids who are registered at your school. How would that pan out? Or would you, as a principal, have to draw the line at the registration to say, sorry, you know, my norm is 1 to 40, and therefore I can't accept any further students in my school? And that would account for the 72 in one class, because there aren't a sufficient number of teachers and so on being allocated time. But if there's a reduction, how quickly do you lose a teacher then? In the province that you worked with, KZN, right? What was the ratio, pupil teacher ratio? Oh, so it was exactly the national norm. Okay. Ms. Martin?
When in a
There's the norm of teachers. They have your cohort. So what you would then do is you would say, each of you are the class teachers. Okay, so you are the teacher for the class. In other words, that's your class. And then you work out your schedule on the basis that the five periods of English that you have in a week will be taken by me, even if I have to go to your class to teach it. But ultimately, that class has got one son, in other words, 30 or 35 or 40 or whatever. So what I'm saying is that that becomes manageable because you have a classroom, a teacher allocated to a classroom, and then the teacher roles with the subject if they're specialist teachers. But in high school, the problem would occur because of the seven classes, everybody wants to do, let's say, home economics. And there's only one home economics teacher. So that it seems to me that that should only happen in high school and not necessarily in primary school, because there are no choices in primary school. Everybody has to do the same subjects and so on. Yeah, Mosquina, you had your hand up for a while.
Subjects have been weighted, as to say, the mathematics school campaign, and the number of learners per class, the weight that's given to subjects, to each subject, has paid the ratio, because it's just to happen in high school. As to say, you cannot expect an English class to have the same number of learners as the mathematics class. That will have a direct impact on the allocation of teachers. I'm not sure really whether that's happened, but there are two differences of allocating teachers at the primary school level and at the high school because of the weighting of the subject. And again, on this specialization, it's better, as you are saying, to be with the teacher, it's better with the primary school level. It's not that much of a problem on the allocation of educators. It's happening mostly in high school, as you say, really. Then I say, there is a problem. You say, in point one high school, with enrollment of 200, only 200 learners. But the problem there, as okay, people are looking at 1 into 35, you find that head school will only be 60. But there are different subjects in that high in that school.
And management and the issue of standard setting and so on. The question I want to pose is this. Are we all agreed that given all of these restrictions in terms of both resources, I mean, we've seen when we were at the department that, like, the equivalent of 1% increase in teacher salaries would mean the cost would mean $1 billion. Okay. So when we factor those resources, we have to start thinking and shrinking and kind of trying to design systems that work for everybody equitably and so on. But this, I don't think that we can divorce the issue of quality education from the issue of teacher-student ratio. Because it seems to me that the biggest factor that has a direct effect on quality outcomes would be the issue of the ability of a teacher to be able to spend some individual time with the student. And that doesn't necessarily mean on everything, but on those things where there are difficulties. We've seen that, and the thing that impressed me the most of that school, you would remember the name because you were talking about the name, something about faith, Christian faith. That farm school, you remember where the lady was saying that they get paid even less than the menial workers of the municipality, the people who are keeping the streets and so on. But that they keep their classes small, well, not because they keep it, but because it is a rural area and their classes are very small, and they're able to take children who are really traumatized, who in any other circumstance would not even finish school. Many of them are orphans, many of them have parents who are really ill, some of them just don't have any caregivers. And these are the success stories that they are able to present to us. Why? Because they say they have committed teachers who can spend that time with those kids, and they do spend that time. And central to it wasn't resources. That school doesn't have much resources. They have sometimes multi-grades in their classrooms, etc. But the fact that it's quality time spent, individual time spent, actually translates that changes people's lives, you know. And so for me, there are two discussions. The one is, what does the country afford? Where will the resources get us? And we must be efficient in how we deploy our resources, etc. But the issue in principle is that a worthwhile course to go? Do we agree that it is time on task per individual learner that will actually turn around the quality outcome? And here we have teachers, so maybe you want to speak to that issue just in isolation of everything else. If everything was equal, and if there was one thing you could change about the education system, what would that be? Would it be this? Let me hear this for sure.
Thank you, I thought I am going to get the book so that I'll be more effective, and I didn't find the word in the office. But I want to agree with you. I don't know what was said before I came in, and what Honorable Zina was saying. But I want to agree with you more on if we want to bring out the quality education into the first goal. The other day when the department spoke to us, goal number one, if you remember, was quality education. To agree with. It has to do with teacher capacitation. That class size must come down. And we have a huge responsibility to take that very seriously. I think one challenge is because the nonsense standard, the teacher pupil ratio is always reduced after 3 years, not the nonsense standard, but after 3 years. After 3 years, they say the school will be like even 700 learners. And after 3 years, they check the number and it goes down, but it's done 3 years, unless it is changed, things like this. But that's how it used to be. And if it's like that, these numbers I mean, sometimes you may lose learners if they pass the grade 7 or go to a more primary school. You end up with a smaller Yana number. After 3 years, when they come to your school, then teachers will be redeployed because your number has gone down. Teacher pupil ratio is determined by the number of learners, 1:40. It becomes a challenge that is done only 3 times, I mean once in 3 years. I don't know how we can go about it, but we need to review the way we do things. If doing it every 3 years is not assisting, perhaps it needs to be done every year. Because we find schools with more teachers at one percent, because of these 3 year issues, and one school with less, and the imbalance is removed. And the outcry about one is to 40 was very serious within the union. Remember, the teachers that are seated here are emerging from unions, different unions, that they come from this. The 1:40 is outdated in the world. It's a big number. You can't have individual attention if you teach 40 learners in a class, for crying out loud. And we need to talk about it, because from the same budget, the most important will be the salaries, of course, and the classes, building the infrastructure and other things can't support. But we need to change our mindset if we want to change the evolution of this country. The lady that spoke of the smaller numbers was talking, I think the best faith school was the private school, if I remember correctly. There you determine the enrollment. But in a public school, it is not correct to send a child away. When they come, you don't tell them that school is full. That school is never full for learners who stay at that particular area because they have a right to learn. So that I think we need to go back as parliament to the department to, we have seen their plan, but then to change the results of this country, we definitely need actually to obtain the quality equity that we want. The first thing to do is to bring down, I agree with this, bring down the class size. It's too big. 1:40 is big, and it ends up being not 1:40. There are these disparities because of the 3 year period. If I did not answer correctly because I left and missed something, but I believe we need to work on that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Sir,
remember
my question?
Thank you.
foot will try to move, but quite the time, if we were to go out, we'll find so many foot that will not have your control. So if you have to put it on feet, you know, and then when you get into a club, the lighting will get one, two, three, five, six, seven, whatever the fluctuation. But I'm saying, government is unable to move closer to 140 kilos and have lesser or maximum input. So if we were to say we need to exercise, I think we would be too efficient. Or whatever, it would be like our public school has become almost like private school. And that's why private schools need us, because they are able to reduce the class size to between 20 or 15 submissions, and then register under the second subject, you know, and you see the leaders who are children at times. Europe can send half-way to their school, even if they decide to get rid of us. That is something that happened, and that is not really America. All these clubs are American. The first one will be rich. But if an instance we are able to give individual attention to learn how to going to play from general, then those who are well
get to a point where you can have and you can be sure that in every class that you go, those national norms are going to exist. Only then can you start becoming ambitious and raising the bar a little bit more and say, well, let's see if we can't get at high school level 1:30 and at the primary school 1:35, you know, something like that, and systematically then to deal. I think that's a very, very valid thing to make. Of course, there are all kinds of arguments, and one of the things that we'll come to, and I've just today seen that, that input by Statsis, where they're saying, well, money can be found, and money can be found by re-looking at how the department actually finances, or the various education departments finance public schools, because in the public school system, there are different categories. So in your former model, fee schools particularly, your Westerford, which is a former model fee school, gets the same funding that a school in Kyrgyzstan will get from government. The only difference would be that Westerford is able to add fees and hire more teachers. And so the question then has to be asked, is that fair? Is it fair for there to be the same allocation of resources from government to those two very disparate types of institutions? And that's, I think, what Sato is raising in their submission, to say if you want to reduce and decide which class sizes essentially are huge in your township school, in your very rural provinces. And should you then not look at how you deploy government resources? Of course, that will have a huge impact on your Model T schools. And the other debate is, and you've seen, all of you would have seen, the Institute of Race Relations finding on path rates, particularly of African students in model P schools. And you see how high those path rates are. I mean, it stands to reason. It's precisely this issue that Mrs. Mishwan has, that if you don't have a class size that is manageable in terms of delivering quality education effort, you know, you're not going to be able to achieve much in terms of quality outcomes, which may or may not be the only issue existing in Model P, because obviously there's not more resources than as far as teacher qualification is concerned and so on, all of those things pertain in the school, by and large. But the one issue that does definitely pertain is that, generally speaking, your model teacher schools tend to have lower numbers in third classes than your township schools, than your rural public schools, etc. So there's all these debates that arise as a result of this issue. And certainly we haven't heard the last of those issues. I had somebody else's hand.
You were open
for a
lot of minutes. Chair, you've had many different debates. First of all, on the teacher-pupil ratio, it's not always necessarily true that small is good. Small class size is certainly a factor in improved results, but it's not the only, and it may not be even the most important factor. And if you look at what the World Bank says and what people like Doug Limont and James Toomey say, you can still succeed with large class sizes. I do agree that we're not, we aren't ready yet perhaps to talk about the ideal situation. We should perhaps first be concentrating on, let's make the current ratios work properly. And then just on what you just brought up about Winsford getting the same as Kyleisha School, something I brought up in my budget speech, is that it's not that Winsford is getting too much necessarily, because they don't get great amounts, well, I don't know, but schools like that from government, that schools in townships are wrongly allocated to the, to quintile 5, say, as I've just experienced in Port Elizabeth, where you have a school like Helenbell Primary, where they have payment fees of 100 grand per child per year, they've got a 20% payment rate, and they are put in the same category, quintile 5, as a top performer model C school. That's clearly negligence. Anyway, let's deal with making the system work as it's currently supposed to work. I would suggest before we start having debates about ideal class size and so on, that must come, but maybe not yet.
That's certainly a
point
that's been made. I saw something on the side of my eye, but I was just sitting there and I'm kind of having to look on this side the whole time, so I didn't see it.
Yeah,
it just
one thing, but if
maybe interpreted a different way, but maybe said we should be doing it in all the same form as the same form.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to say the submission from Central Primary School is trying to assist. I'm reading it from, I was not here when it was done, but it assists, they're coming with a reasonable proposal. And I hear us talking like maybe I should give you some very short scenario that would help us. You see, children trusting their parents, you know, they think you can fight any giant. We are government, we are seated here. There is a story that came to me now, and it's an honest story. One day, you know, this good fire, when you can't expect, have you ever heard that? My kids are now old, they are 22, 28, and 25. But I remember when one of them was 1 year, one year and 4 months. We were seated far away from the child. They were at the gate. When this put fire, you know, the way it passed, I nearly tried to hide where I was standing, but the child came running to me. So I had to say, I was scared, but the child believed that there's something that I can do about it. We cannot just government sit down and lament. I think these are proposals. And this proposal can change the situation. Yes, we don't have the money, but for sure, if you have one child and you get 2, 3, and then they become 10, you cannot believe that the same salary will sustain all of them if they are not 10. You need to do something to make sure that things are better here. The X model system that we're talking about, I don't know if they are fun, but maybe we certainly. They are not getting that much. They are not. They are not getting lot of the thing has. Lots of thing has one thing has two thing has. And it's not many things like that I have been wrongly created. We talked about this. It's a mistake that we talked about here, and it needs to be corrected. That across the street, there is thing has four, and this side of the street, there is thing has one. It makes no sense. Those kids come from the same family, and that thing must be corrected. And if there's a lot of money going to X model school, why do they go there? Because they get 700 times a month through Salino. For between 400 and 7, they are getting more. So if we can take that money and give the schools that do not have, we can definitely agree with this admission. Foundation phase 1 to 25. Intermediate phase 30 to 1. I love it. Learners with special educational needs 1 to 50. Around there. Because some years back, when I went, it was on behalf of SAT. To no way. The teacher pupil ratio there was 1:24, and that was a public school. If we want to move as South Africans, we cannot avoid talking about teacher pupil ratio. One repeated because it's like not seen to be a challenge to other people, but it is because I taught for 35 years, and you can't teach 100 kids and be expected to get the same results as somebody teaching 15. That we can argue because words, you know, are nice to whoever sees them. But the bigger the class size, you don't have that. I think we need to look at this and make it a submission. Where the money will come from, maybe the next budget will take care of it.
Okay, next point, take a pause and let's think some more about this issue. Because here you can see that they very strongly felt views on some of these issues. And particularly, I mean, I'm very, very concerned that most of the submissions that we've got from teachers raise those issues. But clearly, it's raised in isolation of all these other issues that we've got raised in isolation, particularly around the implications of budget and salary. Clearly, given the fact that as a department, the budget of this department is one of the largest in government. That has to cause us to seriously pause and consider
Having said that, clearly, we have to take progress, even though we have no offset or the bids are far too high, that we haven't achieved those norms in every square inch of our education system. So there's still schools, as Mr. Lario has pointed out, that he went to school in Eastern Cape on the weekend, where there was what, 1:70? 74. That's a high school, I think. Primary. So I'm still at a loss as to how that happened. And that's really a big issue. It's a really big issue that we need to address very seriously in this report as well.
Just a quick reference to that, Jen. That's due to the fact that they haven't issued that bulletin, so the school's not getting the teachers that it's due.
But you see, this is what I don't understand. If you're saying that they haven't issued the bulletin, is it the issue that Ms. Mushwana raised in her first input, where she was saying that the problem is actually that the department reviews it every 3 years, and in between there could be a middle year where you suddenly have a surge in your numbers. And but then that, there should be a light at the end of the tunnel. In other words, next year I'm going to get my quota. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a saturated situation.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, and perhaps it's a slightly separate issue, because other provinces issue their bulletins much more frequently. And you don't have the problem getting as bad as it has done in that province.
And how frequently do you know? Are the Eastern Cape province supposed to issue?
It's supposed to, and it hasn't been.
Supposed, but how often? How regularly?
I know that there's a minimum of, I think, once a year or twice a year. But I know that they have it for in the Eastern Cape since, I think, for like 18 months or something like that.
I think we still need some more information as to how this actually works, and I think your original proposal that we asked the department to come and address us on this issue. How is it meant to work? How are we supposed to get to this norm of 30 to 35, whatever, right? And then we can again revisit this debate, because it is a crucial debate to have. And it ties up with just general delivery. And I think Ms. Mushwana is correct that we do need to spend more time on this. Not to say, look, let's be satisfied with the thing. Well, let's see what we can do. I mean, our job is also to try and raise the bar if it can be raised. Okay? Bearing in mind, of course, as always, that we still face the challenges currently. So, this one, we need an input by try and get somebody at some stage to do that for us sooner rather than later. We're going to speak to Mr. Matsue. See if he can point us to the okay. Quite a lot of interesting issues that are raised by the schools. The next one is training a principal on HR and legislation. Let me just read that. Training principal on HR and the sector, EDO, Education Department official. Project advisor. Must not be given other tasks to do. They must be available to the principals of the schools they look after. do the job of they can so and then they could visit the office. School has two phases as well, so foundation and intermediate. They must be allocated an HOD for each phase. Is that, Ms. Mashwana, your experience? Ms. Mashwana? Is that your experience? That if you have phases in your school, like your foundation phase and intermediate phase, it's because that there's an HOD for each of those phases?
No, my experience is that if there are six educators in a school, you qualify for one HOD. If they become 12, then you have two HODs. If you become 15, you qualify 15 educators, then you qualify for one basic principal as well. That's how it works. Unless it changes drastically. Thank you.
I think that would be fine though. I mean, does anybody have a problem with what Mashwana now explained? I mean, I think that is equitable. I don't think that if you have a very small school, you should have so many HODs and so on. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Does anybody, if you look at that input, does anybody think that there's something being alluded to there that we haven't talked about? Yeah, if the school has two phases, example, foundation phase and intermediate, then it's being allocated HOD for each phase. Okay, and then the next issue is from the immediate setting of course through regular bulletin. And that they have to wait more than a year to advertise personally, which is the issue that we've been dealing with now.
Just another $3 or something, maybe $3 or something.
really didn't fit. We needed to be able to see any idea of what is going to happen. Unless it becomes visible to each other, how long does it take to see a post? I know there are issues with GPS and so on and so forth. These are things that people can find a way to go to the but we can't let them just like that. Almost a whole year, a whole year, a professional being killed, so even the academics coming and going just like that.
And tell me what we'll do. We'll ask, when we request the department to talk to us about how these measures actually pan out in the school, we ask them to do a comprehensive thing for us. To talk to us about vacancies in the different provinces. What are they? How long have they been vacancies? What is the, how long does it take on average to fill posts in the different provinces? And some of these suggestions here are bulletins going out, not just on the internet, but actually reaching schools and so on. And it seems to me that what happens also, what happens everywhere is that teachers move from one school to another, and that creates a vacancy there where, you know, the other one is told and so on. So that's also fine. Some new people are always joining in, especially if it's more senior positions like HOD and so on. So there must be, they obviously, you know, there must be a kind of way to manage some of these issues, because obviously you don't get the point. I mean, I don't just interview you today and I say, okay, tomorrow you're starting somewhere else. There should be a process in place. Say, okay, but you're leaving this particular post, so we'll have to start emphasizing that particular post and, you know, have some kind of period within which it's acceptable to have a vacancy either in one place or another. So, you know, those kinds of issues, I don't think we spent too much time as a committee dealing with those. And I don't even think when we went to the department, we looked at the HR management issues, but we spent too much time on curriculum and other issues. So, this clearly is a matter that we'll, and we'll probably have to spend a whole session as a committee dealing with just this stuff. But I think it's worthwhile us at least flagging the issues. What this helps us to do is to ask the question when they do it. So we'll do that. Trade school.
Back then there were a lot of F into which we have F colleges now.
But what is again?
Back then there were schools that were, there were colleges like FET, but they used to call them AMA schools, because what you do there was to do, if it's a mechanic, you are just being taught how to fix the car and that is all. So you specialize on a particular apprenticeship or training, and it was not much of a need for you to do a theory part of it, as long as by your hands or whatever you can do what you're expected to do, and that was enough. Thank you.
And that was that for school or was it? Did somebody have to finish their matric, or did they have to finish any particular level before they entered such a school? How did that work?
What I know then, it was more of after secondary school, though there were some exceptional, maybe at some grades from standard 10 and then onwards, they could accept you.
And these people who taught at these schools were obviously tradesmen themselves. They were not teachers, academic teachers who taught subjects like English and math.
Yeah, what they do, I have a relative who did mechanic. So they just take you to the workshop and give you an engine and a book. And they say, disassemble this engine. You disassemble it. And after that, they say, assemble it. We want it working. You assemble it. And you are a mechanic. So from there, they can opt to go to classes and teach you that this is what we call a carburetor or whatever. But more emphasis was on you doing the actual work than reading about.
Now, in fact, it's the opposite of the MCC. After the commander complained today about MCC, saying they're crossing a lot of grammar things. But some of them will find they don't do well in terms of English and other things in the normal public school. Too much of it. When they go to this attitude as we have today, they still find the good subjects.
Sounding level 2 to 4.
So they still think, but anyway, they will not be more than that. If they want to go to the killing part, and then we still have anything in this one. I think that's why the issue is clear. The context is to say, we still need those in our school. And government has moved into a much more complex context, which still prepare our people, even in terms of language and manner, who detect and understand.
That's a very interesting idea. So it's almost as if what it is a filling school, and it's the school of trade, the trade school that is being referred to now. That is bereft of the kind of academic threshold that we now place when we're dealing with the NCD story. And that what it is really catering to the skilling needs of people in a very practical way, as opposed to necessarily attaining any degree or diploma or national qualification. As such, but that what that does is that it allows you to have a skill, which is not this. I mean, I take it that they would. I don't know. I'm not sure about the details. The schools of trade, would they have some kind of diploma? How would those things work? Intermediate kind of qualification, even before you get to FSC level. This N1 into the university. That's the intermediate between your school qualification almost
Yes, just to clarify, the N1 and N2 qualification allows someone to drop out from Stand 8 to then pursue a specific trade up to N2, which is the equivalent of the trick. And then post N2 was tertiary education, N3, N2, N4, and this was all artisan-based skills. So something like plumbing, bricklaying, etc., etc. It was a specific trade which once you underwent, as the gentleman explained, a certain level of actual theory and coursework, you were given practical experience and then tested what was called a trade test at various levels to attain N2 or N1 or whatever.
Okay. So it's very much then the documents that I would have sent to the AMC members that I drafted around the two-stream option. I think you must look at it. But I think also what is probably wrong with it in this sense with the trade schools is the lack of the existing framework, which is the N1, N2 going up to the trick. Because you're now operating, because you say they don't exist anymore, you're operating in a vacuum. You have to look to the qualifications within your school. But actually what it is something a little more elaborate than what I've got in that document. So we need to look at that document and see if we can't pull out some of these things. Because I think the reintroduction of trade schools then is something that we must start flagging. Because I see it coming up. People call it different things. People call it skilled schools. People call it artisanship. All of these different concepts tend to come up. But it's the same concept, which is saying, not everybody needs to go to university. Not everybody can go to university, frankly, because our capacity to absorb students, like 20% of those matrics, are too far, with exemption. So what does the rest do? How do you actually become a useful member of society? We talk about that. For example, if you start, you don't have a skill. So all of those things, I think, feature very prominently in this debate, and I do think that more work needs to be done in this regard. I also know that, we went to some of the schools of skills here in Western Cape, there's just phenomenal work going on there. The problem is that they don't exist uniformly within the public school system. Not every single province has got a school of skills. Some provinces like Gauteng, Free State, and the Western Cape have more than one per province. But other provinces don't have them at all. I'm told that Eastern Cape doesn't have them at all. And that's the biggest need I think we see, given that very rural province. In Mpopo, I'm not sure about. I don't know, Mr. Shwan, if you know, but I haven't heard of anything in Mpopo. From my inquiry. I know that there are some agricultural schools. And then, of course, there's these schools of technology. What do you call them? Schools of technology, okay? Or technical high schools, which are also a bit different to the skills one. Sometimes people tend to mix them up in terms of content. So maybe we should look at that and see where they are, whether we have sufficient number of them and how they're being utilized. But I do think that this, well, you'll see my document when I view them, but they're extensive views and they're really meant to do this comment to show. Then we've got my own party initially, but then hopefully some stage as well. So will you look at that as well, especially this thing here, because it was done in the absence of talking about the N1, N2, Mr. Makubela, you might want to make some comments. incorporate some of those ideas into the report itself without moving to trade. So, that's it. Thank
you, Professor. I think we are facing a very clear challenge of changing the mindset. We need to come up with a paradigm shift for universities versus SETs. And to the best of my knowledge, N1, N2, N3, with due apologies, N3 is equivalent to maybe problems with people. If you have an N3, it's equivalent to metric. That's what I was looking for. So I was like saying N2. I'm sure we need to check that. But okay, N3, it is equivalent to metric. You still cannot, if you want, you can apply for an NCSC. That's what you have entered. They are supposed to give you. But you know, they don't. I know I was dealing with a case of somebody. And because N3, you'll be doing business English, just to give you an example. And not the home language we were talking about yesterday. And because you have, it's like you're having to set additional languages, which you used to say is second languages. Therefore, you do not qualify. That became is equivalent to metric, but you're not going to get it until you supplement and do a home language, which is very much like one has stated. Because you get to N3, you expect to calculate from grade 1 to N3. Just like it takes one to leap from grade R to grade R to get metric, the years remain the same. But somehow we are created from the research. The trade schools that he says were all over this domain. We had one in Gaza school, which was electric Ambach school. Ambach is an African word for, I think, trade. So we had them. And now what they are doing in the N1, N2, N3, they are in different colleges. They do more or less the same thing. I missed an opportunity to go with you to the schools of skills around here. What we need to do as government is to ensure that the quality, or rather the certificate that you get from N3 be equal to the one that you get from, is equivalent if you move the other way, so that people will see it getting the same thing. If you have N6, to the best of my knowledge, a person with N6 is equivalent to a person with a junior degree, BA, place. It's equivalent. N6 is equivalent to a BA degree. But then, if you apply for a job with your N6, they say bring also the matrix degree, which you don't have because you came the N way, so you have N3. They should recognize N3 as your matrix, and not saying, bring the speakers where it's like you are doing nothing if you come to the end. And I think we need to deal with that process of quality. I think we can do it through the NQ, the quality panel. Thank you. I hope I was able to let me.
Well, I think it's in one way, but I think in another way that the proposition that we're being asked to consider now is to say, not so much the issue of the end. And I think the end feature, because previously you used to have these trade schools and they would grade you on the end, which, as you point out, has certain equivalence. But now that we don't have those ends anymore. No, you've got, when you go to FET, you're at level 2, and you go up. When you finish FET, you're at level 4, as I understand, which is and from 2 to 3 or 4 or something is the same as matrix. Just remind me how that thing works again. It's really confusing.
Grade 10 is level 2. Grade 11, level 3. Grade 12, level 4. So in terms of the NQF rating upwards, Mr. Bandy, you wanted to say something, but So grade 10, because what they believe is that at grade 9, you are allowed to help them.
And then you go to FEP, where you can do it also, your grade 10, 11, 12, but through your FEP, and you get to the same level.
Grade 9 will be taken at level 1,
yeah.
But the emphasis then starts at level 2, which is grade 10. Grade
12
then will be level 4.
And then when you finish your FEP, the 4 years, you come out at what level? You come out slightly higher than level 4, isn't it? Or you come out at level 4?
In terms of NQF, you are at level 4, if I'm not mistaken. Because what happens is that when you go to level 5, you should have 1 year after matric qualification. Then at level 6, you should have 3 years after matric certificate, which at the present point, 3 years would be equivalent to a degree at a university if the NQF ranking, in terms of the NQF ranking, let me put it that way.
Now, whatever you say, which I don't understand, I hope somebody else understands, what you said made a lot of sense to somebody. That person wasn't me. Okay? Look, basically, what we have is a situation where if you go to FET, there is some kind of equivalent to your chip. Why?
Yeah.
Because it was designed in such a way that you could actually leave school, exit at grade 9.
Yeah.
And then still have another opportunity to finish your matric.
Yeah.
But that isn't skills. It isn't that stuff that you were saying existed to you. And I think what this commission is saying, we need that back.
They want it back, yeah.
And if you look at Mr. Mahada's research, you'll find an interesting phenomenon. And most people who are registered at FET, in fact, it's not Mr. Mahada, it's the HSRC research by Michael, what's his name? Porter. Most students at FET are actually people who have matriculated already.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
What is happening, in fact, is that kids are looking for alternatives to university. And they're going to FET thinking that this is an alternative to university. And in fact, there's no progression. There is no progression.
Yeah.
That's really what's happening. So what we need to do is clearly what is higher education's whole aim at this stage, which is to ensure that there are those options in terms of colleges and so on. But that this whole FET issue then must be re-looked at in the context of what it is and understood to be what it is. So it's not suitable for kids who are leaving the trip to go into everything because there's no progression. So that's the same, you'll be coming out with the same qualification that you've already had. And so that's the big problem.
Thank you.
Thank you.
workshop this to them. At the end of the day, will be somewhat lacking. You may not communicate, you may not do something, you may not understand like the one would be general. Anyway. But then, on your specific trade, you'll be good. You can produce building this, you can build that, and so on. Then you'll be fine. But with the MCB, they've added this, from this way of building to understand certain subjects. Meaning you can still say, if you were failing in the normal route of metrics, you will still say you won't achieve, but in the past you will achieve. You will be an artisan, something and can work or
the trade school.
Yes, the trade school. You can then achieve, but then you will need to be monitored, because then there will be another technician who will be taking with you upon achieving. So all I'm trying to make is now the schools, the kids' schools, what is it that are offering FOFO? So what used to be in trade schools in the part of Loama? Because clearly it will be different with the programs offered by the FHS today, which will then have incorporated the component of some aspects which you live in your normal school. But as you were saying, the difficulty now which we got as the higher education when they are not here was that these kids, as they complete education, they are thinking that they can even progress further into university. They were supposed to be absorbed by the university. And it was possible. On the hand, they accepted with their qualification so they get practice. It means from very much, then find a way for something.
Oh.
You know,
there's no interface there between
the
FET and the
university. There's no mobility that will allow you to leave certain and go straight into the technology.
So, one question that you need to ask, I mean, and I hear what you're saying, because what that does is that it gives you that.
Yeah.
then you don't have synergies, just like you have currently with your SAP and versus your university department. That you shouldn't have some kind of process where, for lifelong learning, you have schools of trade. But there must be some kind of intersection between your schools of trade and your SAP college. Because if you don't, then you're not creating a pathway for lifelong learning and improving on your skills. So in other words, you leave school, let's say, at the age of 16, which is what, grade 9, right? Then what you do is you go into a school of trade, and you, like with some other relatives who became a mechanic, wants to become a mechanic. But let's say when he's 25, 26, he wants to improve his skills. He's much more matured now, he's going to be focused on the academic stuff and so on. He wants to go somewhere to improve his skills. Surely there must be that interface with your education colleges or the similar type of institutions to enable him to do so, just as you were arguing for the SEC person who is qualified at the level of SEC to actually be able to access university as well. So that there's that seamless route that people can traverse throughout their lives. Just as we speak about teacher development, which should be mechanics for young people. But please look at that document. I'm thinking, Mr. Lorimer, I'll give you a copy of that document if you're happy to take it confidentially and just keep it under wraps. Because it's meant to be a consultative document to get people's views on it. So we're very, very interested in hearing from you, especially you, to understand what trade schools were. Their functions and maybe see whether or not what I'm proposing is similar or very, very different to what the system really is going to do. Yeah, okay. The that you're supposed to do. Yeah. Okay, thank you. We'll then flag that issue as well for a special focus. In the report, the issue of trade schools, and we'll come back to it. As I say, people call it different things in their presentation, but it's the same concept, I think, of saying we need alternatives for kids who are dropping out and not being able to succeed in the academic field.
Continue and allow them to complete their route
the education group. But I do know that they don't offer that stuff anymore. So in other words, if I wanted to register for NY today, I wouldn't be able to do so. Yeah. And that's what Mr. Mahada is saying, that you start with level 4 and you go up to level 2 to 4 and proceed with that is your only choice. Clearly those who have already been through the process of the process are going to let them complete. But having said all of that, I mean, I do think that you're right. What we should do is we should get Mr. Mahada, get a template of those things so that, I mean, because it's very confusing. Unless you're an expert like Mishwana who works with this thing every day, I can't see how ordinary people understand it because I don't.
Can't take that input on the HR issue
and then with the Mahara you'll get a good qualification story. Anything further members need to ask, need to do? Next week we're back to normal. We're sitting Tuesday morning only. It doesn't give us much time to go through some of these things. I was hoping we could really factor back on this thing, but it's not going to happen. I want to suggest that members try and go through some of these summaries on your own time and so on, and just deal with the issues that you feel need highlighting in the community. And then start dealing with those issues rather than